The topic for this afternoon's lecture is the relationship between film and music. This is a huge topic, and really what I want to do is to try and make a bridge between what you will be discussing next week when you're looking more at music and what we've been discussing in the first week about film. If we think about music and film, it's really part of a subset, a smaller part of the whole relationship between film as visual images and between sound. And almost everyone who writes about film and sound, film and music, always makes a complaint. And that complaint is that whenever we talk about cinema, we always focus on images. We focus on pictures, we focus on visual aspects, and we don't think about sound very much. I think this is less true today than it has been in the past, but I think it is still true to a certain extent that most of the analysis of cinema is to do with visual images, what we see. We say we go to see a film. We don't say we go to hear a film. And this is a strange thing, that we ignore sound in film, because films have never been silent. When I was talking to you yesterday about the film The Man with the Movie Camera, I was talking about how the soundtrack for that film would have been performed by a live orchestra. The soundtrack was to incorporate all the noises of the city, the industrial noises of machinery, the noises of tram bells, sirens, and so on and so forth. So film has never been silent, not in 100 years, or 115 years now. But we still don't pay much attention to sound in comparison to visual images. When I said I think that it's less true today than it used to be, I think there's been some significant changes in the last 10 or 15 years in relation to sound technologies. And so there's been a change of roles in film production. You see on a lot of film credits now the idea of a sound designer, someone who takes responsibility for the role of music, of sound, of dialogue, etc., throughout the film. We've also seen big changes in the way in which sound is reproduced in cinemas, and I'll talk a little bit about this later. What I also want to talk a little bit about is the relationship between the film industry and the music industry, because there's been increasing convergence between these industries in the last decades. Even if we just want to focus on music as a subset of the relationship between film and sound, there's many, many topics we could look at. Things like specific film soundtracks, the use of original music composed particularly for a film compared to using pre-existing music. We could talk about genres of film music or film musicals as a specific genre of cinema. A lot of film analysts who work in sound, people like the French theorist Michel Chion, talk about the difference between realist and non-realist soundscapes, or diegetic, non-diegetic soundscapes. So there's many different issues we could explore. Because we have one lecture, what I'm going to do is three specific things. I want to talk a little bit about the role that film takes in shaping narrative, in shaping the emotional ambience of a film. The second thing I want to talk about is the impact of technological change in sound recording, sound processing, and sound reproduction. So the way a filmmaker records sound for a film, the way that is then post-produced in a studio, and then the way that is reproduced in the film theater for the audience to hear. And I want to give you an overview of changes that have taken place from the beginning of cinema up until the present. And I particularly want to focus on the impact of digital technologies in sound production and reproduction since the 1990s. And this is very much a part of the convergence between film as a specific sector of a broader media industries related to also mass media, related to music as an industry, and the increasing interlocking nature of those industries. I want to read you a quote from an interview I did with a man, Dominic Case, he works for one of Australia's biggest film service companies, ATLAB in Sydney. And I was doing a research project a number of years ago on the impact of digital technology on film production. And Dominic was one of the people who really said, you know, everybody talks about special effects, the change in the kind of images you can produce in cinema. But he said, and I'm quoting, "I'm more and more convinced that the big story about film technology as far as audiences are concerned in the past few years has been sound. Because although you can do fancy digital things, the image remains glued to that bit of screen in front of your eyes, and it's not really any bigger. But the sound has gone from one woolly sound, woolly, muffled, all tied together, coming from the back of the screen with virtually no frequency range or no dynamic range whatsoever." And he says it sounded like a telephone conversation in cotton wool. So imagine if you have the telephone receiver and you've got cotton wool stuffed in your ears. That was 20 years ago. It's gone from that to something that fills the theatre in every direction with infinitely more dynamic range and frequency range. To me, that's an explosion in the experience compared to what you're seeing on the screen. So he's saying the experience for the audience of going to see a film is now a lot more about sound than it used to be. So that's one of the things that I want to talk about. Now, I was saying this first theme, how does music relate to narrative? How does it produce emotional effect? How is it put at the service of film narrative? I think most of us know from experience that when we're watching a film, the music will influence the way we read the images. And there's been a lot of research in this area. You can take the research with a grain of salt, a lot of it's psychological research. But I'll describe some of it to give you a sense of what has been done in this area. Two researchers in Scandinavia created an original 10-minute film. And it was just a really simple film with the scenes of an elderly man traveling on a train and on a subway, intercut with scenes of a young couple eating breakfast. And what they did was they put these visual images together with five different soundtracks. And the soundtracks were representing film genres like crime, melodrama, thriller. And then they would interview audiences who watched the film after hearing it with a soundtrack. And they found that it had a big effect on the way the people understood what the story was, that the soundtrack, the expectations that we have with certain types of music, condition how we read the images, and we make judgments and assumptions about what the meaning of the film is. There was another study done about 10 years ago comparing the impact of using classical music, orchestra music, to using popular music, to using rock music with the same images. And it found that people are watching an advertisement for just a shopping mall, to go down to a shopping mall, if it had classical music accompanying that advertisement, most of the audience would think that the people shown in the advertisement were more affluent and that the stores were more high-end stores. if they had a rock music soundtrack, most of the people thought the people were less successful, less daring. So it's interesting, just these assumptions people make based upon the soundtrack that was produced. I think we can think about the way that going beyond those kinds of psychological dimensions, sound, music, really conditions the way we perceive images in film, particularly the rhythm of images. We know we can establish visual rhythms through editing shots together. If you have a long shot and then you have, when I was showing Man with the Movie Camera yesterday, some of the sequences have very fast editing. But music can also change our perception of the rhythm of a scene. It can work to, if you have a lot of fast shots all together, to have continuous music through the scene can work to make those shots coherent, glue them together in a way. It can also work to punctuate the scene, to draw our attention to certain visual elements in the scene. In the study I was discussing about the advertisement for the shopping mall, the audience who watched this advertisement with the rock soundtrack perceived that the images were moving at a faster pace. In other words, the images conditioned our sense of the speed of the image, the music conditioned our sense of the speed of the images. And in fact, audiences perceive things quite differently. There's a man in that advertisement seen shouting, but it was only when the rock soundtrack, with the popular music soundtrack, that audiences saw him. Michael Shion talks about sound temporalizing images, in other words, giving a sense of time to images. He says sound is the rubber stamp that marks the image with the seal of instantaneity. The classical example would be if you are having a fight scene. For someone to get hit, there's always got to be a, and then you know that's the moment in which the image has hit. But there's reciprocity. Images can influence what we hear. Sound can influence what we see. He's talking a little bit about how sound can condition our expectations. If we have a soundtrack that's of a thriller, we anticipate that something might be happening to somebody. That kind of sound with violins or something, we think maybe that's a romantic sound. There was a study that was done using visual excerpts of a single character, just someone's face, showing the same expression with different soundtracks presented to it. The audience would read different emotions into that image. They would anticipate what might come next differently. In other words, sound primes us, is the term people use. It makes us ready for a certain kind of action to take place. Conversely, it can make us read images that have just taken place differently if we have a certain kind of soundtrack. Now, to make a little bit more sense of this, I want to show you some examples. We'll hope this is going to work. Show you the first example from this. The first example I want to show is from a very well-known film that I hope some people will have seen, Alfred Hitchcock's film Psycho. And this is one of the classical examples that's used in terms of the relation between sound and the action. There's a scene in the film where the principal character, the protagonist, we've actually followed her for the first 20 minutes or so of the film. Almost entirely she's on screen with point of view shots showing her activity. And then suddenly in this scene she is brutally murdered. So it's a shock because there's not many films where the main character is suddenly murdered early in the film. And the way in which the soundtrack works in this film, and the way in which the music works, I think is a very effective example of how this the music can be used to create a particular sense of ambience. Now, okay, we seem to have sound now. This excerpt will show you the scene. It's a very interesting scene, actually, cinematically, because even though it looks like a very violent crime, in fact, the knife never touches the woman's body. What you will see first is the scene with the music done by famous composer Bernard Herrmann, and then you'll see the same scene repeated afterwards without the soundtrack, and think about the differences between them. It's just with the sound of the voice then, no music. Hopefully you can hear this. This time without the music. Stop you. I'm not sure what I should be pressing here. That'll do. It's interesting to compare the two. I mean, there's a number of things going on there. First, the music. He's using violins, which is traditionally music that we think of for a classical or romantic score, but he's using the violins very discordantly. They're almost like screams, they're rhythmic, and they're so it's really attacking the ear. There's an enormous number of shots of edits in that scene. There's something like 60 to 80 shots in a very short scene, so it's very jagged visually. And the music sews the whole scene together and gives it a much different rhythm than when you don't have the music. When you don't have the music, it's much more simply a melodramatic scene because you hear the screams a lot more. With the music, you're actually more disturbed emotionally, I feel, with the impact of the violence. I'm going to show you one other sequence, if I can. Yesterday evening, did you watch the film Kyanaskotsi, or you did? This is a scene from that film. And it's interesting to consider in terms of what Maran was talking about yesterday with the opening sequences of that film, someone coming into Shanghai along the Suzhou River and seeing the old abandoned housing and destroyed and so on. This is a sequence of the film which deals with a number of housing developments, but particularly one very famous one, the Pruitt-Igoe housing development that was outside Boston in the United States. And this was a housing, high-rise housing that was constructed after the Second World War in the 1950s. And for all kinds of reasons, it failed as a housing development, and it was demolished in the early 1970s. And the architectural critic Charles Jenks actually dates this as the moment of the end of modernism in architecture, the end of the modernist dream. This sequence, I think, is very interesting because it's looking at the city and the flip side of what we were talking about yesterday, of the city as an environment of speed, of dynamism, of rapid change. Some of the things that Maran was talking about yesterday about nostalgia, about the loss of one's environment, about obsolescence when things go out of date and start to be destroyed. And I think this sequence is very powerful commentary on that. And it's interesting to think about how the soundtrack affects our understanding of the images, and particularly how the change of rhythm in the music really affects how we start to read these images. So I'll play this sequence. It runs for about 5 minutes.
Louder.
Yeah, if you can.
Oh, it's the
That's as loud
loudest.
As it can go. Yeah. Everything's as loud as it can go.
Yeah, it's the utmost.